This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, June 11th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. The KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival continues this Thursday with a performance beginning at 7:30 in the Stella Boyle Smith Fine Arts Concert Hall on the University of Arkansas campus. This concert will feature Trio Arkansas, performing Brahms' C Major Trio, plus works by Ravel and Musgrave. Performers include the U of A Music Department faculty and guest artists. Admission is free. More information is available at fulbrightsummermusic.uark.edu.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, more from Walmart on its work with global e-commerce. Plus, we talk to the author of A Story Unfinished and learn about his 99 Days with Elliot. Also, we have a roundup of visual art exhibits throughout the region and more.
But first, Arkansas Highway Commissioner John Burkhalter says he will announce today that he will run for a statewide office. He has close ties to former President Bill Clinton and current Governor Mike Beebe. Roby Brock with Talk Business Arkansas has more.
There has been a lot of speculation that he might run for governor. He's talked to a lot of people about running for governor. It's unclear as to how the whole Mike Ross reentry into the race after Dustin McDaniel dropped out. And, of course, you've got Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter on the Democratic side, which is where Burkhalter would run. You don't know if he's going to run for governor, or he might run for lieutenant governor, where there is a much clearer path to winning the Democratic nomination.
Burkhalter will make his announcement during a conference call with reporters today. Meanwhile, on the Republican side, former Congressman Asa Hutchinson and Little Rock businessman Curtis Coleman have announced their candidacies for governor.
Former Democratic U.S. Senator Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas is now a lobbyist working on issues that impact small businesses and independent contractors. Lincoln lost her Senate seat to Republican John Bozeman in the 2010 election. In an interview with Talk Business Arkansas, Lincoln says Senator Mark Pryor will face challenges in his bid for re-election, especially when it comes to getting his message to voters.
You know, you take a vote, and before you can walk out of the chamber, there's probably 300 different descriptions of what you voted for, how you voted, why you voted, and there's really not that opportunity to get a consistent message out. And it's tough because there are so many different outlets where people get their information.
These days, Lincoln says she's spending more time with family and partnering with former lawmakers on bipartisan public policy initiatives. Lincoln admits she enjoys working in the private sector and does not plan on running again for political office.
Weather permitting, the city of Bentonville will test its storm sirens at 1 o'clock this Friday afternoon. During the test, the sirens will sound twice, just as it would during an actual emergency. The test marks a change to the scheduled test of sirens, moving from the first Friday to the second Friday until further notice.
The College of Business at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith has received international accreditation. According to a release by the college, college officials say the accreditation from the Association to Advance Collegiate Schools of Business represents the highest achievement for an educational institution that awards business degrees. Steve Williams, Dean of the College of Business, stated that the AACSB accreditation is the hallmark of excellence in business education and has been earned by less than 5% of the world's business programs. 672 business schools in 44 countries have received the accreditation.
Last week, we brought you a story about Arvest Bank and its status as a heavy lender to agricultural interests in the United States. Yesterday, Arvest released corrected information regarding that earlier release. Originally, the release stated that it had originated $452 million in farm loans in 2012. But that actual number was $462 million in farm loans for the year, representing an 11% increase over farm loans originated in 2011.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals are on a roll after their win at home last night over cross-state rivals, the Arkansas Travelers. The Nats beat the Travs 6-5, making the Nats 20-41 on the season. The four-game series wraps up tonight at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale.
Although the official start of summer is still more than a week away, temperatures are starting to feel more like summer. I actually thought that yesterday when I got in my car.
Yes.
Marty Trexler is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Little Rock, and he says the last few months was one of the cooler spring seasons we've had in a while.
Of course, in the summertime, we get temperatures in the 90s. At least we are somewhat lower than last year. Remember last year, we already did press the 100-degree mark a couple of times before this date. So we at least running closer to normal for a normal summertime. And hopefully that trend will continue, but we will see those 90s at least much of this week.
Trexler says the state is now transitioning from a cooler spring to the warmer temperatures, which he says are here to stay.
The repeated periods of showers and thunderstorms we received through the period, of course, when you have clouds and rain, it does lower the temperatures. So we did see an unseasonably cooler March, April, and the early part of May. Many locations, of course, had several degrees below normal.
It will be cooler than that tonight with clear skies and lows around 68 degrees. Tomorrow, expect sunny skies with highs from 91 in northwest Arkansas to 95 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with lows from 69 in northwest Arkansas to 73 in the Arkansas River Valley. During its annual shareholders meeting, hosted by the Home Office last week, Walmart invites reporters from around the globe to spend the week touring facilities, attending festivities, and meeting with company leaders. Ozark's at-largest Jacqueline Froelich attended several executive sessions on e-commerce, as well as international and U.S. business. Today, she files the first of a two-part report.
Walmart is fully investing in global e-commerce because it promises tremendous returns. That's because anyone, anywhere, will be able to purchase any Walmart product, no store required. The global e-commerce division based in Silicon Valley staffed by 1,500, with 2,500 worldwide. The executive panel on global e-commerce, attended by 75 reporters from around the world, was led by Division Chief Neil Ash, President and CEO. He said Walmart has a vision for commerce.
And you'll see the momentum and ability we have to deliver a consumer internet shopping experience as well as anyone in the world. But only we can marry that with the assets of the world's largest retailer. And our vision for commerce is that you shouldn't have to choose. You should be able to tailor that experience however you'd like that to be. Whether it's at your computer and your desk, whether it's in your tablet on your couch, whether it's your mobile device walking down the street, or whether it's doing all of those as you walk through the door of one of our stores. We want to deliver to you the shopping experience which is most tailored to you, by you, in a way that no one else in the market can do.
Joel Anderson, President and CEO of Walmart.com, says a new search engine launched last year caused a 20% increase in conversion, meaning website visitors who take action.
Our smart pricing, we've launched a set of sophisticated, algorithmically driven, automated pricing tools that quite honestly now allow us to change our prices much more rapidly, with the goal of having the lowest prices online of the items our customers want most.
And with more shoppers visiting online, the company introduced a new homepage last month.
I encourage you to go visit our new homepage, and what you'll see is a three-tab design. And that three-tab design brings together a traditional online shopping experience. It has a tab focused on trending and browsing, and it has a tab focused on our stores. You see, we have three unique customers that come to visit us for different reasons, and the three-tab experience allows us to cater specifically to that type of customer. More importantly, it is our first launch of our new global technology platform. And so with that, you'll now see us start to iterate, enhance our site on a much more rapid basis than we have as we migrate to our new global technology platform.
Walmart plans to double its assortment online and boost site to store.
And we've been working with our stores in some cases for over 5 years. Site to store launched in 2007. We now experience about 50% of our transactions that are started online are finished in a store in one way or another. Pay with cash is something we launched just last year. It now represents 3 to 5% of our sales. And quite honestly, it allowed our unbanked, underbanked customers to participate in the online experience without the need for credit.
Online orders will increasingly be fulfilled by local distribution centers and stores, said Neil Ash.
We're building what we call next generation fulfillment networks, which are a combination of e-commerce dedicated facilities, which serve individual packages and individual items, with the DCs that you know of that operate the stores, the largest and most efficient transportation network in the country, and then using our stores as nodes, 4,000 nodes around the country, to get product close to our customers.
Jibu Thomas, who heads mobile and digital global e-commerce, says shoppers are increasingly using mobile devices to make purchases.
Another way we look at this is mobile brought e-commerce brought the stores to the web, but mobile brings the web to the stores. And what's exciting about that is we can now use the power of technology to provide digital capabilities to our customers that are shopping in our stores that allows them to save time and money. And then we can combine that, blend that seamlessly with the online experience to create an experience that no one else can match, and in the process, use that engagement to convert more of our store-only customers to multi-channel customers. So this is an area we're really excited about and we've been making investments in.
Half of Walmart patrons have smartphones, and many are 35 and under. One-third of Walmart.com visits comes from mobile apps, and now the company's trying to steer customers to store mode and scan and go on iPhones.
So we geofence all 4,000 of our stores, and when a customer walks into any one of our stores, our app experience transforms itself to surface the capabilities that are most relevant to them when they're in our stores. Scan and go, again, is another example of listening to our customers. They wanted more control of their shopping experience and more convenience at checkout. So with Scan and Go, a customer can scan any item on the go as they're shopping, budget their trip while they're shopping, and with a single scan at our self-checkout registers, they can pay for their basket and they can leave the store. We're piloting in 200 stores. We're encouraged with the early results. So we're investing even more into it.
This summer, Scan and Go apps can be downloaded on Android because a majority of customers use it. Neil Ash says e-commerce is being scaled to markets in the United States and the United Kingdom, where grocery delivery is huge in Walmart's Asda sector. In the United States, Amazon.com is leading in grocery home delivery.
Asda is the second largest grocer in the UK, and which is the largest grocery delivery market in the world. We also deliver groceries in Walmart To Go in San Jose and San Francisco in the U.S. We deliver groceries in Shanghai via Yihaodian. We deliver groceries in Mexico via Superama. We deliver groceries in other markets in Latin America. So grocery delivery for us is not new. We know what it is and we know how to do it. It requires a market density, enough customers in a market. It requires basket density, meaning you've got to shop and you got to put enough things in that basket to make it work. And it requires route density, meaning you can put enough orders on a truck to make it economic. We have learned in Asda how to do this as efficiently as anyone in the world. What we don't know is whether that's what customers want in every market around the world. And so we, as I said, have done a test in the U.S. in San Jose and San Francisco Bay Area where we pick from our stores via Walmart To Go. We've proven the efficiency of the model. We've proven that we know how to do it. We haven't proven market density, so we haven't proven that enough customers want it.
Two other targeted e-commerce markets are China and Latin America, which has some of the highest online traffic in the world. But Brazilian native Fernando Madeira, president of Walmart e-commerce, says Latin Americans in most places are still timid about purchasing online.
Why they don't buy more? First, because they do not trust at all yet on e-commerce. So they are not comfortable to share the data yet. They don't trust that the product will be delivered. Secondly, it is about assortment. People don't find all the products that they are looking for to buy online with the players and assortment that we have in Latin America. And the third, when you decide to buy something, sometimes the experience is not that good. All those things are a huge opportunity for a company like us that you are looking for to excel the fundamentals of e-commerce.
The world's largest retailer is anticipating the world's customers to flock to its EDLP, everyday low price. And to meet demand, it's building a global technology platform to accommodate global e-commerce, which this year is expected to generate $9 billion in sales, and which has, over the first quarter, grown 30%. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Several area organizations have been adding new people to their staff recently. The Ozark Natural Science Center has completed its national search for an executive director. The organization recently announced a major component of its Growing Forward capital campaign, a capital campaign with a $1 million goal. with the hiring of Matthew Miller as executive director. Miller brings more than 20 years of leadership experience in residential environmental education and resource conservation to his new post.
The Beaver Watershed Alliance has also hired a new executive director. John Pennington has been appointed to the position of executive director for this nonprofit organization. Pennington has worked as a county extension agent conducting watershed outreach and education in Washington County, Arkansas for 7 years. In his spare time, John serves as the chairman of the Lake Fayetteville Watershed Partnership, vice president of the Ozark Highlands Trail Association, and secretary for the Arkansas Earth Day Foundation.
Arkansas Tech University Ozark Campus has announced that Faith Johnson has been named its new academic advisor. Johnson, who previously served as an administrative assistant in the Office of Student Services, will counsel students in academic affairs. Also, she will assist with degree audits and articulation of transfer work.
In other academic news, Robin Roberts, Dean of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences, will step down effective August 1st of 2013 and become a faculty member in the college's Department of English. During Roberts' tenure, the college received an increase of more than $11 million to its hard budget from the university, raised more than $22 million from donors, hired an additional 21 new tenure-track faculty and 8 new staff members, increased faculty diversity, and added new joint appointments. Todd Shields, Dean of the University's Graduate School and International Education and Professor of Political Science in Fulbright College, will serve as the interim dean while a national search is conducted to permanently fill the position.
99 Balloons is an organization that helps others engage those with disabilities locally and globally. Locally, they help organizations, primarily churches, to offer a respite night for families with disabilities. They provide training and resourcing to help them serve families in their communities. They call them recess programs. And through those programs, they have had hundreds of volunteers who they educate on the plight of kids with disabilities globally. Matt Mooney is the founder of 99 Balloons. He joined me in my studio and began our conversation by telling me that disability globally is a pretty bleak scene.
It's either institutionalism, a lot of time it's stigma, a lot of the time it's the definition of their life is that they have a disability, and they're now slotted kind of into a category, depending on what country they're in, because of their disability. And so we're trying to change that, and we allow our volunteers and individuals to kind of engage that piece of it as well.
Because, I mean, here in America, I mean, people with disabilities, I'm not going to say that they have it pretty good, but at least, you know, Americans seem to understand and support it a lot better than they do in other places.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think just as a culture, as a country, 30 or 40 years have allowed us to come a long way. And I would say we still have a long way to go. But if you go outside of our culture and outside of a few different cultures, then you definitely step into a different reality for what disability looks like globally. And so we work with various countries, and we work with partners in those countries, whether it be Ukraine with an organization right here called Teamworks in Northwest Arkansas, whether it be Haiti and working with a group there. We're taking a group to Uganda this summer to work with a home for children with disability there where they live on site.
Well, so what will you be doing in Uganda this summer?
We will be taking two different teams, basically a professional team. So we'll be taking some therapists and a counselor, and about 8 on that side of the team and about 8 on the other side of the team. We'll be taking 17 in whole. And the other side will be a day camp.
So you mentioned this respite night. So you started this program called Recess with a capital E.
With a capital E. The capital E is for our son, Elliot. And Elliot would be 6 years old. He lived for 99 days. And so that's also where the name of the organization comes from. We released a balloon for every day of his life at his funeral. So the organization is 99 Balloons. And so as we founded it, as we started it 6 years ago, was just to live out the lessons that we believe God taught us through Elliot's life. And so the worth of these individuals, despite their ability or despite what they have going for them, that they have worth and they have beauty.
Well, a lot of people would, you know, not necessarily want to forget about an experience like that. You know, I mean, it's tough to
Absolutely.
Go through something like that and to lose a child. So why live out his life, I guess, rather than just kind of put it away?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think there is in grief and in missing him, there is a desire for it to go away. I totally, completely understand that. And we've talked with people who deal with it all different ways. For us, Elliot never was going to the background. And so we saw that as a very bad goal. We weren't forgetting him. We weren't moving on. We haven't moved on. I would say we're still walking through what grief looks like and what missing Elliot looks like, even with our three beautiful children under our roof and the absolute different life than we have now. We miss him and we think, man, we wish he was here every single day of our life. And so for us, a bad goal for us was to try to forget that. We wanted instead to incorporate his life into ours. And that's why we're quick to say that all that we do, whether it be in parenting our children today or the work that we're doing with 99 Balloons, we're trying to live out the lessons that he taught us. The thing that we believe in is redemption, and that there can be good that comes from this, and it'll never be something that we look at and go, okay, now it's worth it. And all the amazing things that we've been able to do and be a part of and seen because of Elliot's life haven't made it all okay in our mind. We're really quick to say that, but it is a work in progress. And that's actually what I write about, is that it is an unfinished story. Our household is a great picture of that. We've now adopted a girl with a disability, you know, but for Elliot, she wouldn't be our daughter. And so the way that has worked into our life has kind of been crazy to watch, and not by our design by any means.
Your daughter, Lena, that is adopted from the Ukraine, and she does have disabilities.
Yes.
And her life in the Ukraine would be much different.
Yeah, you're going to get me crying, which is good because you can't see it on the radio. But we got to know of Lena's story through work that we were doing with a group actually here in town called Teamworks that works with children in Ukraine. And, you know, the reality for Lena in Ukraine was she was in a crib in an institution for about 23 hours a day of her life. And the care that she received was very, very poor. And the caretakers, they kind of didn't know what to do with her. She has basically traumatic brain injuries due to lack of oxygen around birth, and because of institutionalism has some other things going on for sure. And so you meet Lena, and probably upon seeing her, the first thing you noticed is, okay, she's got some things going on. But if you really press in to get to know her, she is a beautiful girl, a beautiful person. And so
How long has Lena been part of your family?
She has been in our family a year and a half. So we have Anders, who's three, our three-year-old mm-hmm. son, Hazel, who's four. Those are both biological, and we have Lena, who is six. But
how has she grown since? How has she grown? What kind of changes have you seen in the year and a half?
Oh my goodness! How long do you have? And so, one of the most just obvious ways that's really been fun to watch is they shave their heads in the orphanage. So one thing is she has a beautiful head of hair, long, long blonde hair. When we brought her home, she was nonverbal and immobile. She's walking independently, kind of scooting around on her own, which is absolutely amazing in the time frame of that. She signs to communicate. She's learned signs. She has one word that's kind of more of a noise, which is dad, which is totally not fair to her mother, but I'm kind of fond of it.
Anders and Hazel are biological, you mentioned. Were you, was there any chance at all that they could have the same defect?
Yeah, so great question. The doctors in the medical community would say, you know, with trisomy 18, which is what Elliot had, that it's really just, it's kind of a genetic disease. It's not hereditary per se. So it's not, we weren't more likely to pass it on to our next children. So from the beginning, their take on it was, go ahead, try to have different children, you know. The odds of this happening again are infinitesimal. Of course, once you've lived those end of the odds, that really doesn't quite hold the weight that it did at one time. And so we had to walk into having other children thoughtfully.
So just a few minutes ago, you mentioned writing, that what you write about. So you have a book coming out.
I do. I have a book coming out that is called A Story Unfinished, which basically just tells of pretty much the story of Elliot and how it's played out in our lives. Because it kind of moves from before, during, and after Elliot. Very shortly, kind of after Elliot, with the work of 99 Balloons, and here's Lena. And so it's kind of a memoir telling the story, walking through his life and kind of what we learned through his life.
Well, how did you decide that you wanted to write a book?
Well, kind of the way that Elliot's story kind of got out there, we've gotten to share it in some crazy ways. is we kept the blog, and it's funny, the reason that we kept the blog is so that we wouldn't really have to talk to people, you know, didn't really work out that way. But we thought, hey, we'll start this blog, it'll let our friends know kind of what's going on, what they can pray for, how they can help us. And so we started this blog, and we began to kind of, during Elliot's life, we began to say, you know, each week we'd have an update on Wednesday of, hey, here's how the week went, here's how Elliot's doing, because his life was so day-to-day. I mean, in our friends and in the community that kind of gathered around to behold his life knew that. And so for me, that was kind of my introduction to writing. I'd always thought that I would like to write, but he really was kind of the subject that I got to write on. And so coming out of that and getting to share his story, thing that kind of continued to come up was, you know, maybe we should write a book to tell a little bit more of the story, a little bit more of our side, as we continue to see people encouraged from it and kind of wanting to know. And so I set out to kind of write that, not knowing if anything would actually come of it or if it would just be for us. And so it was about a three and a half year process of writing it.
Well, and it is a full length book. For some reason, I just wanted to ask. I mean, it's more than 99 pages. You know, I'm stuck on this it number is. 99.
I know, so. I know. We do a lot of the 99. Yeah. We think it's a good number. But yeah, it's a full length book. Kind of written as a memoir, if you will. There are blog posts within it from the time that he was here with us. So we kind of incorporated a few of those days to tell the story. But it moves from before, during, and after. And it is a full-length book. And although I haven't held it in my hand, I'm supposed to sometime soon. So it's coming soon.
Awesome. Matt Mooney is the founder of 99 Balloons and the author of A Story Unfinished, 99 Days with Elliot. A book launch party and fundraiser will be held at the Rock House on Dixon tomorrow evening at 7. For more information, visit theatypicallife.com. This is Ozarks at Large. It is Tuesday, June 11th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas, and with me now is Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
It is a big month for music.
It is.
I mean, any month that includes Elton John, I'm pretty sure one must say that.
So sorry I missed Crocodile Rock.
Oh, me too. But I can endorse this, having not seen them, but having heard from many people that you really need to see Hot Club of Cowtown.
Oh, I've seen them a couple of years ago at Trail Mix.
They are here in support of a new album called Rendezvous in Rhythm, and they will be at the 324 Ballroom, which is behind Jose's in Fayetteville,
yes,
for a show starting at 7:30 tonight. If this is the second time you hear this, why are you not there? Tickets are $22. Okay. And tickets are on sale for 3 days' grace, the newest addition to the summer season at the Arkansas Music Pavilion. They will be performing August 18th with special guest Hinder. Those tickets are available at 443-5600 and start in price at $32.
All right. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life. Every week on our program, we choose a theme, and this week, the theme is This Week. We're going to bring you favorite stories from the 7 days leading up to the program. We will cover big news stories in a way you will not hear anywhere else, and small personal stories unfolding far from any TV cameras or news gatherers. A radio searchlight across the week we all lived through this week.
This American Life, Sunday mornings at 10 here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
KUAF is supported by Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. These daily newspapers offer local, state, national, and international news, plus business and Razorback news. NWAOnline.com for more information.
Wanted to offer some congratulations to University of Arkansas Vice Chancellor and Director of Athletics, Jeff Long, who has been named an Under Armour Athletics Director of the Year. The announcement was made yesterday by the National Association of Collegiate Directors of Athletics. Long is one of four honorees from the Football Bowl Subdivision, and he will be formally recognized during the NACDA's 48th Annual Convention at the World Center Marriott Resort in Orlando, Florida, on Saturday. Saturday at the James J. Corbett Awards Luncheon. This is the second time in as many years Long has been honored for his work at the U of A. In 2012, Long was a finalist for the Sports Business Journal Athletic Director of the Year.
Horses for Healing, one of the leading equine-assisted therapeutic riding programs in the nation, will host its annual barn dance this Saturday. It begins at 6 p.m. at 14673 at Daniels Road in Bentonville. The dance will feature live country music by Jamie Wolf and the Wranglers, a barbecue dinner, pony sponsorship, and a silent auction. Horses for Healing is a nonprofit organization that strives to provide therapeutic riding programs for physically, emotionally, and mentally challenged residents in Northwest Arkansas, focusing mainly on children. For more information, horsesforhealingnwa.org or search Facebook.
Come see the broadcast of Tales from the South, Eureka Stories, on June 16th at Caribe? Do you know?
I don't. I've been saying Caribe.
Caribe Restaurant. We're going to go with that. Tales creator Paula Morell taught writers how to write their true Eureka tales for the show and how to present it on the radio. Tales from the South showcases Southern-style storytelling, and it can be heard here on KUAF Saturdays at 3:30 p.m. Tickets to the event, which is a fundraiser for the Writers Colony at Dairy Hollow, are available by calling 479-253-7444 or at the door the day of the event, which will be held from 4 to 6. Tickets include a light dinner and a cash bar will be available. I talked to Paula a while back when she was headed to Eureka for the Writers Workshop.
I remember.
Mm-hmm. And so this event isn't, this is... It's not being broadcast live. They're recording this, and it will be this particular storytelling edition of Tales from the South will be broadcast, and you can hear that on KUAF later on. If you're also looking for something else to do in Eureka Springs this weekend, the Eureka Springs Blues Festival.
It is. It takes place this weekend.
It does take place this weekend, and we have your chance to win some tickets to that, and that's coming up later in the show with a trivia question, so please stay tuned.
I started to hear now.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs.
I started to hear now, but I changed my mind. But I'm going to Little Rock where I can have better time.
There have probably been songs mentioning Little Rock and Arkansas since before the state was even a territory. Heard here is Pearl Dixon with Little Rock Blues, although the first verse favorably compares the capital city with then-thriving Phillips County blues town Helena, there's not much else in the song to distinguish it from a song about any other place name. Guitarist and vocalist Dixon recorded Little Rock Blues, December 1927 in Memphis. The 78, with its flip side 12-pound daddy, was her only single. Little Rock Blues is in the musical style of the initial recorded commercial heyday of the blues, which began in the early 1920s and was mostly sung by women.
I sent for my baby and she don't come. I sent for my baby and she don't come. All the doctors in hot springs sure can't help her no.
By comparison, although some have incorrectly called Robert Johnson the father of the blues, it was already the late 1930s when he sang about the Arkansas towns of Hot Springs and West Helena. Johnson had one of the most settled points in his life when he lived in Phillips County. In his song, Dust My Broom, he mentions looking for his girlfriend in West Helena before trying East Monroe. He later contemplates Ethiopia, the Philippines, and China. In Johnson's 3220 blues heard here, a more specific mention is given to healing Hot Springs, Arkansas. All the doctors in Hot Springs sure can't help her none. Both songs were recorded during Johnson's first recorded session in November 1936 in San Antonio, Texas.
I sent for my baby man and she don't come. I sent for my baby man and she don't come. All the doctors in Hot Springs sure can't help her none. I'm gonna shoot my pistol, gonna shoot my Gatling gun. Baby, why you stay last night?
You got your hair all tangled and you ain't talking right.
Arkansas, are your rivers still flowing? Is your cotton growing? White as snow. Are the squirrels still a-barking up on old Crowley's Ridge? Has the girl I was sparking gone and burned another bridge?
The Wilburn Brothers, Arkansas, gets a little more specific with its mention of Crowley's Ridge. The 1972 song was the 31st and last hit for the Wilburns. Teddy and Doyle Arkansas. Wilburn were born in Hardy, Arkansas, in the early 1930s. One of the most celebrated mentions of Little Rock in a song happens only once, but it came in the opening lines of a prominent 1970s rock hit, Grand Funk Railroad's We're an American Band. Out on the road for 40 days, Last Night in Little Rock put me in a haze. The song became an anthem, and Grand Funk's stage show featured an electric U.S. flag, which flashed on and off during the performance. The 1973 chart topper, produced by Todd Rundgren, has had a continued life through classic rock radio play and soundtrack placement. The Little Rock resident put on the map by the song, Sweet Connie Hamsey, has maintained an equally long-lived presence at regional concerts.
We're just two little girls from Little Rock. We lived on the wrong side of the tracks. But the gentlemen friends who used to call, they never did seem to mind at all. They came to the wrong side of the tracks.
Marilyn Monroe and Jane Russell sang Two Little Girls from Little Rock in the 1953 movie Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, based on the Broadway musical. At first, the ladies from a small street on the wrong side of the tracks want to punch the Little Rock man who broke their hearts in the nose. Ultimately, they decide to thank him for teaching them to find a gentleman who's shy or bold or short or tall or young or old, as long as the guy's a millionaire.
I was young and determined to be wine and dine and ermine, and I worked at it all around the clock.
In the 1940s Broadway musical the movie Gentlemen Prefer Blondes was based on, Carol Channon was the little girl from Little Rock. Although it paints Little Rock men as heartbreakers and Little Rock women as illiterate gold diggers, the song does get bonus points for the sheer number of times the city of Little Rock is mentioned in the song.
Little Rock, Little Rock, Little Rock. I'm just a little girl from Little Rock. A horse used to be my closest pal. Though I never did learn to read or write, I learned about love in the pale moonlight, and now I'm an educated gal. I learned an awful lot in Little Rock, and here's some advice I'd like to share. Find a gentleman who is shy or bold, or short or tall, or young or old. As long as the guy's a millionaire. For a kid from a small street, I did very well on Wall Street, though I never owned a share of stock. And now that I'm known in the biggest banks, I'm going back home and give my thanks to the one who broke my heart.
The one who broke my heart.
The one who broke my heart.
And they're all songs of Arkansas. From
Little Rock, Little Rock, Little Rock, Little Rock.
I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information, visit arkansongs.org.
It is the second Tuesday of June and the day when we take a few minutes to tell you about visual art exhibits available for viewing this month. In a few minutes, the work of Sam King. But first, High Fiber, Women to Watch, is on display through July 7th at the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum, which opened in January and has seen about 2,000 visitors since. Women to Watch is an exhibition program carried out in conjunction with national and international outreach committees formed by the National Museum of Women in the Arts. Every 2 years, NMWA presents a Women to Watch exhibition featuring emerging women artists. This exhibition is significant because it reflects compelling trends in contemporary art and represents 5 leading female artists who work in Arkansas. This exhibit fits into the mission of the Fort Smith RAM by raising awareness for an art form that has not always been considered mainstream, fiber art. Buckyball, an outdoor installation, remains on display at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville. And Angels and Tomboys, Girlhood in 19th Century American Art, opens June 29th. The Fine Arts Center Gallery at the University of Arkansas is pleased to present a group exhibition of current MFA students. This exhibition will present work in a wide range of media, including painting, drawing, printmaking, ceramics, sculpture, and video. Women Take Flight is the Fayetteville Underground's first national juried exhibition. The criteria for artwork considered by the juror were two-dimensional visual art, with any interpretation of Women Take Flight. Entries were judged on artistic merit, composition, technical merit, use of media, subjective appeal, and the artist's ability to capture the essence and feeling of women taking flight. The theme, Women Take Flight, was chosen for June in recognition of the 2013 Air Race Classic, an annual women's air race. The race will end in Fayetteville June 21st. Those notes are being played by musical and visual artist Sam King. They're part of the soundtrack for one of 3 video pieces on display this month at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. The 3 TVs are just one part of King's exhibit, Comus. The other works are oil on canvas. As it turns out, this comma isn't the kind you would find in a sentence. King used his musical background as inspiration for many of these works and the title of the show.
It's like a music theory thing, which commas are basically like if it's when you have, you try to get the same note, but you use 2 different tuning or intonation systems to get it. So the notes are slightly different. And if you play them at the same time, if you actually sound them together, then they'll beat, they'll kind of shimmer. And to, you know, a lot of people know, if you play guitar, you know what it sounds like if you use harmonics to tune. It'll waver until you get them just right, and then it'll stop wavering. But using a comma on purpose would basically be like leaving it in that zone where there's a real strong beating.
He says that he picked the title on a lark. He noticed that there are things you can do visually with paint and color that are similar to what happens with a musical comma. When certain colors are significantly different, but also significantly similar.
They beat visually, just like you can see it in several places there. Like when you look at the blue with that purple in the far left painting, the way that it's hard to let your eye rest, nothing will fix. It just keeps kind of like, they keep pushing at each other. That would be, to me at least, an example of a visual analog for that sound experience.
The colors in the paintings on this wall are bright, with pink, oranges, reds, and blues, and they're more vivid than those on the opposite wall. King moved to Northwest Arkansas after graduate school at Indiana University in Bloomington, and he says that some of the work in this exhibit is made from a desire to make art that relates to this area, and a lot are based on the landscape along I-540. I noticed one that, to me, looked like leaves. His work is a little abstract. He says he expects people to make associations from his work, but not necessarily the same ones that he does. He says some of his works are personal, some are serious, and some are jokes.
You see that painting with the blue shape, the real intense blue shape? The title of that is, advice from a stepdad who is an actual genius. And it's a reference to, I watched the documentary about, that was made actually at University of Arkansas about Conlon Nancarrow, the piano composer guy who composed for player pianos. And it's like a story that his sort of, I guess his stepson told about trying to ask Conlon for help with math. And he's like, oh yeah, I got this. I know just the thing. And so he goes over to his massive library and he comes back with this like, you know, 3-inch thick textbook. And he's like, the answer will be in here somewhere. And then just goes back to his study. And that stuck out to me.
He says there was something about the strange shape and the way the other fields of color interact. Under the shape, there's a drip of paint that is sort of irritating. On some intuitive level, the painting made him think of that story. At a time, he had taken a hiatus from painting and focused on video works. When King started, he used still images, much like stop-motion animation. He says that these works are similar, but with different pacing. Rather than animation, it's layering shots of leaves, sky, and what looks like the actual paintings. Using filter effects, he's trying to take information and force it into abstraction, so that the videos relate to the paintings, taking a different direction to a similar place. I've always wondered how long an artist intends for the audience to watch a video piece.
There is one stance kind of in the world that with video work, really, the whole piece could be contained in one glance or something. Like, you'll get as much or nearly as much out of just having had the moment with it as you would if you sat there and waited till the thing flipped over. I mean, I've definitely walked out of plenty of, you know, video display rooms and museums just because I couldn't quite, like, I had to see a lot of other stuff, and I shouldn't be saying stuff like that, but it really, for me, like, I would rather make it a compelling and brief experience that somebody would want to just hit repeat on a few times and really get familiar with it. Kind of like a song, you know, like a good song is like 3 minutes or something, and you might like it right away, you might not, but it's the repeated experience of it that makes it, that really makes it happen for you, you know.
The sound is all King playing the guitar, but it doesn't sound like a guitar. He uses extended technique and editing to make the sound more like bells or chiming sounds.
And all that is a guitar, like strumming a chord, but then editing the attack off of it so that all you get is the resonance afterwards.
And of course, the sound has the comma built in. As a musician and obvious lover of sound, I asked if he listens to music while he paints and works. As it turns out, he doesn't. King quotes another painter.
I read an interview with him that he said something that felt so true to me, that was that painting actually has its own music, like that he works in silence a lot, not always, but a lot, because there's a thing that happens that is a little bit like music when you're working. It's obviously not the same thing, but the kind of engagement that you slip into when you're working doesn't leave very much room for stuff to drift in.
Sam King is a local artist whose exhibit, Commas, is on display at the Art Center of the Ozarks through the month of June. Also on display there are the works of 14 category winners in the 2013 Ozark Photographic Challenge. A reception for both exhibitions will be held Thursday evening from 6 to 8. This is Ozarks at Large.
That is Sean James and the Shapeshifters. The song is called Chapter 3, Freedom. It's off the new album, The Bear. Born in Chicago, Sean James recently moved to Fayetteville. He was in our studio earlier this year. He performed a cover of John Legend's Who Did That to You. And I know Christine and I didn't get to do the interview. Katie Hendrickson was talking to him. And we heard about it later because one of his friends, Anna Hutchinson of Spring Street Portraits, had come in and videotaped it and then put it on YouTube.
It
blew up very quickly.
Right.
It was, I know it was on the Fayetteville Flyer, posted a link to it, but it did. It got almost 150,000 views. I think 140,000 views on YouTube.
I think that's where it is now. It was about 140,000. But at the time, it went very quickly for here. It wasn't necessarily viral in the sense of millions of hits, but it was viral for something that was done here in this area.
We were excited.
We were very
excited. Something from inside the KUAF studios, too.
Absolutely. So. And he's officially releasing the new album, The Bear, Saturday night at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. But we are offering you the opportunity to listen to it early.
Right. If you go to, we have a new blog on our website. It's called the KUAF Mixdown.
It is.
I believe.
Yes. If you go to the main KUAF page, KUAF.com, you can see it on the homepage. And it's an audio advance. This is going to be part of our audio advance series. We did this before during our spring fundraiser. Three Penny Acre released their new CD, Rag and Bone, and you got to listen to it for about a week, and this will be up for about a week ahead of time. It's very similar to NPR's First Listen, where you get, they have a new album up for a week, so you can listen to it, be the first to listen to it before it actually is officially released. We have a couple other music notes today.
We do.
Oklahoma-born opera soprano Leona Mitchell is performing this evening at the Rogers Public Library from 6:30 to 8:30. The Grammy Award-winning singer has performed Carmen with the San Francisco Opera and the Metropolitan Opera with the likes of Placido Domingo, Luciano Pavarotti, and Jose Carreras. For more information on the event, you can go to rogerspubliclibrary.org or 621-1152.
And more Grammy winning artists coming to the area. We'll have Maxwell, Estelle, Trey Songz, and Hezekiah Walker will headline the Road to Essence Festival. It's a free concert scheduled for Friday evening at 6 at Orchards Park in Bentonville. The concert is sponsored by Walmart, who is a sponsor of the annual Essence Music Festival, which is scheduled for July 4th through the 7th in New Orleans. It's expected to draw more than 400,000 visitors. The company is hosting the Road to Essence series in an effort to build excitement in the weeks leading up to that festival.
And finally, the Arkansas Music Pavilion has added a few more shows to this year's lineup. Gary Allen will perform at the AMP, which is located at the Washington County Fairgrounds, July 12th, and tickets went on sale this morning. Tickets prices start around $31.50. And then yesterday, the Queens of the Stone Age, they were added to the 2013 lineup. That concert is scheduled for October 8th, and tickets go on sale at 9 a.m. this Friday. Ticket prices for that concert range from $34.50 to $44.50, and you can find out more information at amptickets.com.
Well, I'm drifting and drifting like a ship out on the sea.
And we mentioned earlier in the show that we have an opportunity to win a pair of tickets to this weekend's Eureka Springs Blues Festival.
I think we have three pairs to give away, actually. So
three pairs?
I think so.
Okay. All right. Well, even better. My question has to do with that song that we just heard, Driftin' Blues.
Okay.
When it became one of the biggest blues hits of the 1940s, it was played by the John Moores Three Blazers. It's since been played by the likes of Ray Charles and Eric Clapton. So that 1940s version has Charles Brown on vocals, Floyd Dixon on piano, but who was the bass player? Mm. He would have celebrated his 101st birthday tomorrow.
Excellent. So if you know the answer, give us, email it to us at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com, and we will announce winners tomorrow.
Yes.
So good luck. Again, who was the bass player of the song Driftin' Blues?
Yes.
All right. The Bentonville Art and Culinary Festival offers over 70 different events this month, including live music, theater and film, and other visual arts, special culinary events, hands-on children's programming, and more. Information is available at downtownbentonville.org or 254-0254. The 63rd Annual Opera in the Ozarks runs June 21st through July 19th at Inspiration Point near Eureka Springs. The 2013 productions include Madama Butterfly, Pirates of Penzance, and Elixir of Love. Sunday performances will be held at the Arend Art Center in Bentonville on June 30th, July 7th, and July 14th at 4 p.m. Tickets and more information are available at opera.org.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Lincoln.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks for listening.